This episode of the Art of Manliness podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. With the help of Squarespace, tackling your next move might not be as difficult as it seems. Whether you're hoping to start a business, change careers, or launch a new creative project, Squarespace gives you the ability to create an online platform from which to make your next big idea known to the world. And with Squarespace award-winning templates, creating your website is a simple, intuitive process. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com and enter code manliness at checkout to get 10% off your first purchase plus a free domain. Brett McKay here, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. In recent years, several new veterans organizations have popped up to help our men and women in uniform transition from the service to the civilian life. And instead of providing a place where veterans can get together to drink, these new organizations are looking to offer veterans a sense of meaning and mission that they often lose after they hang up their uniform. My guest today is head of one of these new organizations. His name is JJ Pinter, and he's the deputy director of Team Red, White, and Blue, a veterans organization with the goal of getting vets and civilians together to work out. Today on the show, JJ and I discuss the issues facing vets that Team RWB is trying to resolve, such as getting them reintegrated back in their community and staving off feelings of depression. We then discuss why Team RWB decided to make fitness their primary focus and why exercising with other people is one of the best remedies to melancholy and malaise. Finally, JJ and I talk about why it's so important for civilians to interact and connect with our vets and how they can do so through Team RWB. Great show. After it's over, check out the show notes at aom.is/teamrwb, where you can find links to resources where you can delve deeper into this topic. JJ Pinter, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me, Brett.
So you're part of a board of a veterans organization called Team RWB. And Team RWB, it's a veterans organization that's not like other veterans organizations. Can you tell us a little bit how it got started and what you all do that's different from other veterans organizations that are out there?
Yeah, for sure, Brett. I'd be happy to. And thanks for having me. Yeah, our organization is a little bit different, and it's different in a couple ways, but I guess I'll maybe start with the organization, how it got going. Our organization was founded by someone named Mike Irwin, and he and I actually served together when we were in the Army, but he was at grad school at the University of Michigan and was fairly recently off a deployment from Afghanistan and just, I think, was having kind of a rough time with that integration. And he looked around and there was a tremendous amount of support for veterans, but it all felt very kind of episodic. And I think that he felt that, and maybe it was anecdotal, that there was no kind of like long-term support for veterans in the community, ways for veterans to get involved in the community, other than maybe some of the traditional VSOs that everyone knows about. And so that sparked some reflection from him, and he decided, well, I'm going to start my own nonprofit. And I'm going to start my own organization. It's going to be all about kind of building relationships in the community, and it's going to be focused on physical fitness. And that's going to be the way that we're going to do it. And the organization started back in 2010. It was initially kind of an advocacy organization, like building, matching people up, and we quickly moved away from that model.
And so, okay, started back in 2010. So you guys do this fitness thing. That's one of the things, but why do that? I mean, what is it that the whole fitness thing, getting veterans together to exercise together, what need is that filling that veterans aren't getting in other organizations?
Yeah, you've kind of hit on it. The dirty secret of our organization is that a lot of people think that we're kind of a fitness organization or a running organization or whatever it is. And that's not really what we do. What we do as an organization is connect veterans to their community. Our mission is to enrich the lives of America's veterans through physical and social activity. The physical fitness is just the delivery mechanism. Like, that's what we use to make connections to their community for veterans. You know, our fundamental belief as an organization is there's a lot of kind of negative outcomes that people hear about in the veterans space. There's suicide and homelessness and underemployment and drug and alcohol abuse, and there's a bunch of bad outcomes. And so if you have genuine relationships and if you have, you know, a good connection to your community, you don't get to a lot of those negative outcomes. And the way we do that is through, like, the delivery mechanism is physical fitness.
And there's you highlight research on the site that there's benefits of exercising, getting people together, moving together. What is it about exercising together that actually helps these veterans help with issues of PTSD, depression, and things like that?
Yeah, it's got a multiplicative effect, I think, which is what is great about it. I mean, I think at this point, there's nobody who kind of disputes the fact that exercise is good for you, right? I mean, it's good for physical health and mental health and stress relief. And I mean, nobody disputes that. But the thing that group exercise does, we always like to say kind of inside the organization that maybe short of alcohol, that sweating together is the best social lubricant that you can find. It's a tremendous way to break down barriers and to build relationships. I mean, look at functional fitness. It's a perfect example. The exercises that are, you know, the actual exercise is nothing new. I mean, my high school football coach, we were doing those same things 20 years ago. But that's been packaged up in a way that builds these really strong, tight-knit communities. And, you know, we're tribal animals at the end. You know, the way our society is changing, we don't have kind of access to the community like we used to. And functional fitness has found a way to kind of like package that up in a way that's really appealing to people. And I think that's one of the reasons why you're seeing it be so popular.
Right. That's the secret sauce, getting people together.
Yeah, there's shared hardness and group accountability and all of these great things. And veterans experience that kind of stuff in the military. Right. And then you get out of the military and it's not there so much. So looking for it somewhere else, or you can, you know, have a tough time with your adjustment and not.
Right. So I mean, on your website, you mentioned earlier in the podcast that, you know, one of your big goals is getting veterans integrated back into their community when they return from service. You had a statistic on your website saying that a lot of veterans, when they come home from combat duty, they don't return to their hometown. Why do so few returning vets go back to their hometown when they return from service?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I mean, I think that I could probably answer that anecdotally a little bit. There's been some research we could probably go and point to in the notes maybe. But I think a lot of it is less about maybe veterans and more about just kind of social mobility in our society. You know, a lot of veterans get out of the military and they go to school or they're trying to find a job. And you know, a lot of veterans come from, if you look at where veterans come from, they come from small rural towns and they come from the inner city. And I think in the places where they can go to school, where there's economic opportunity, I think that, you know, I don't want to come off as being an expert or to be like quoting research here, but I think that that's largely why they don't end up in the places kind of from which they came.
Well, so going back to this physical fitness aspect, so what do you guys do at Team RWB? What are organizations or chapters of Team RWB doing together? Is it CrossFit? Is it running? What sort of things are you guys doing?
Yeah, that's one of the things that's really cool about organizations. So we're in about 206 cities right now, and our chapters are all volunteer-led. And we try to have just enough structure so there's kind of a minimum experience that a member would have, but we want the chapters to really take on the personalities of the local leaders and the community. So it could be everything from, you know, functional fitness, CrossFit, yoga, or kind of some of our running are kind of some of our core activities. But I mean, skiing and surfing and stand-up paddleboarding and whatever really the local leaders want to do. It's a very kind of bottom-up grassroots approach from our end. And we just try to take really good ideas and to try to resource them and remove roadblocks and obstacles and let the chapters really be organic and do what works for them locally. So all sorts of stuff. I mean, but it's pretty high volume, Brett. I mean, we're probably going to host about 35,000 events this year. And we're probably going to touch about 250,000 people in those events. So there's a lot going on.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, another thing that makes Team RWB unique from other veterans organizations is that civilians can be a part of the organization. Why was that an important factor for you guys, of getting civilians involved in what is mainly a veterans organization?
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because we were one of the first to really do this on kind of a wholesale way. And it was actually kind of a controversial thing, kind of like in the veteran community when we did it. But we just felt really strongly that if we're trying to connect veterans to their community, what better way to do that than to have supportive members of the community as part of our organization? And, you know, we started that from the beginning, and it's been really good for us. You know, there's this whole concept of a civil military divide, which, you know, you could have a whole podcast just talking about that. But essentially, the military is kind of shrinking over time and becoming more and more of a family affair. And there's just like this increasing separation between members of the military general population. And, you know, it's a lot, some people would say, and I think I would include myself in that, that's a pretty dangerous thing for our democracy. And that this is one of the ways that we're trying to get at that, because the general public is really tremendously supportive of the military. And I think just maybe a lot of times don't know how to get involved or how to be supportive. And you know, you could just come be part of our organization and there's no labels. Like, everybody's just a member.
We're going to take a quick break for your word from our sponsors. All right, every man should have at least one suit in the wardrobe. You're going to wear it to job interviews, weddings, funerals, maybe a nice night on the town. You can buy a suit off the rack and it's not going to fit you that great, because off the rack suits, they're designed to fit a wide variety of different sizes, shapes, types of bodies. Yeah, you can get it tailored, but it's still never going to fit you just right. That's why you need to get a made-to-measure suit. But made-to-measure suits can be really expensive. Indochino solves that problem. It makes made-to-measure suits about the same price as what you're going to pay for an off-the-rack suit at a department store, and it's all done online. It's easy to do. Got my navy blue suit from Indochino. What you do is you go online, you get to choose from a wide variety of fabrics. You get to customize this thing how you want it, how you want the vents to look on your suit jacket, the color of the lining in your suit jacket, how you want your lapels to look, how you want the break on your pants to be. Lots of different customization options. And then you go through their easy to follow measurement video. Measure yourself however you need someone else to help you do that. You enter those in. And then in 4 weeks, you have a made to measure suit sent directly to your door. This week, my listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $389 at Indochino.com when entering code manliness at checkout. $389 is about what you're going to pay for a nice off the rack suit at a department store. So it's a great deal. It's 50% off the regular price for a made to measure premium suit. Plus, shipping is free. Indochino.com, promo code manliness for any premium suit for just $389 in free shipping. And you don't have to worry about any more badly fitting suits or expensive trips to the tailor again. Get ready to look like $1 million with Indochino. Also buy Toyota and their new 2017 Highlander. If you're like me, when the weekend comes, you don't want to just sit around the house. You want to get out with the family, explore new places, and try new things. Maybe check out a science museum, hit a festival, or just be out in nature. Well, the new Toyota Highlander is the perfect vehicle for your discovery. It starts on the outside with its sleek design and aggressive new front grille that says you've got an attitude for adventure. Its improved powertrain makes it fun to drive and more fuel efficient than ever. It has Toyota's Safety Sense technology standard, including a pre-collision system and a lane departure alert. It even has 5 USB charging ports, because you know that last thing you want is for someone's device to run out of power. And one of my favorite features is the driver easy speak, which lets you broadcast what you say to the rear seats so your passengers can hear them, so you don't have to yell at your kids when you need to tell them to pipe down back there. So navigate to your nearest Toyota dealer or toyota.com to see why there's always more to discover. It's the new 2017 Highlander. Drivers are responsible for their own safe driving. Always pay attention to your surroundings and drive safe. Also buy Blue Chips of the Road. Weather in the vehicle, the system may not work as intended. See owner manual for additional limitation and details. The TSS pre-collision system is not a substitute for safe and attentive driving practices. Lane departure alert is not a substitute for safe and attentive driving practices either. And now back to the show.
So I can see how this would help veterans, getting, because it helps, you know, having civilians involved helps them get back, integrated back into the community. How does it help civilians? I think you kind of alluded to it. It helps civilians kind of understand where veterans are coming from and the problems they might have, or just see that they're just like regular people, just like you are.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple ways. There is kind of the member-to-member interaction that you're referencing there, Brett, where it gives an opportunity for members of the community to get to know veterans and to realize that, guess what? Like, veterans are no different than anybody else. Like, we came from the exact same places that the rest of our society came to. And there's kind of less and less opportunity to do that. I mean, I think the number now is something like 0.4% of the American population, you know, are serving in the military right now. It's just a tremendously small number. So and so especially depending on what communities you live in, have an opportunity to spend any time around someone who's in the military. There's that aspect. But then the other thing that I think is more powerful is that our chapters, all being volunteer led, a good percentage of the leaders in our chapters are civilians. So a good percentage, and some of our really, really great leaders in a veteran service organization are not veterans. And I think that that's awesome.
And besides the physical fitness thing, one thing that Team RWB does is brings veterans and civilians together to do community service. So what sort of projects have your chapters worked on?
Yeah, that's also a really interesting question. I mean, a lot of it. I think last year we did something like 3,500 community service events around the country. But there's like two components to it. There is the traditional community service that you would think about. And for our organization, we try to stay vectored in on things that are focused on our missions. So on kind of on veterans issues or physical fitness issues. So that might be everything from you know, volunteering at the Special Olympics, running an event at the Special Olympics, or working on a Habitat for Humanity build, or doing like a, you know, a veteran cemetery cleanup, or whatever resonates in the community. Like, that's a really important part of it. But another really critical part is that, you know, we would look at being a volunteer leader in our organization as serving the community as well. So that's another really critical way that people can kind of serve the community.
Right. And I imagine the community service aspect is an important part of helping veterans find their bearings when they return home to civilian life. Because as a soldier, they had a mission to solve. But when they get home, they might not have that sense of mission anymore, and it leaves them feeling a little lost.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I actually tell you a kind of a funny story that I didn't cover when I was talking about the beginning of the organization. So our organization initially started as kind of a one-on-one advocacy model, where we wanted to pair up wounded veterans with another veteran who would be kind of an advocate for them. And the problem we ran into is that we had a tremendous amount of not only veterans, but members of the community signing up to help. And we couldn't find anyone to actually take part in our programs. You know, we had all these people who wanted to sign up to be advocates or to sign up to be mentors, and nobody to actually be mentored or be advocated. You know, following that, we worked with kind of a major consulting company to kind of really tighten down our business model. And they did a bunch of kind of survey work for us. And this isn't unique to our organization, but there's a tremendous sense or desire to continue service or serving for veterans when they leave the military. And this is I think a way that they can do that. You can continue to serve in your community. You know, community service, to be perfectly honest, Brett, that wasn't something that we really wanted to be involved in as an organization. We just kind of said, you know what, let's stick to our mission. And there's other great organizations that do community service, and we can just pair up with one of them. But there was such a rush and like a groundswell from our members saying, like, we want to do community service. We want to do community service, that we finally just kind of embraced it and put our arms around it. And we're doing a ton of it now.
Right. We had the author of Charlie Mike on the podcast a couple months ago talking about some of these other veterans organizations that are more service oriented. And yeah, he just talked about, yeah, a lot of the complaints of veterans have is like they're appreciative of the support, but like they don't want to feel like they're a victim or like they need, you know, to be coddled. These guys are soldiers. They want to help. They want to serve. They want to, you know, do the thing that they're trained to do.
Yeah. I mean, when I look at, and maybe this is like maybe a little bit too soon right now, but I think most people would say that there's probably, when you look at like the national level, regional level, or even your local level, I think most people would say that there's probably not enough good leadership in America. And you can either lament that, or what we would say, especially to veterans, is you can be part of the solution here. Like, you know, go back and look at the Greatest Generation. These folks grew up in the Great Depression. They went off and won World War II in Korea, like fought, and then they came back and became kind of titans of industry in our country. And there's no reason that our generation of veterans can't do that exact same thing. And so we're very adamant about, like, veterans aren't victims. And go be involved in your community. Like, be a leader in our organization. If you don't want to do that, get on your local school board, coach youth sports, be a deacon in your church, like volunteer for Big Brothers Big Sisters. And people are doing it because there's just the desire to serve. And, you know, we just fundamentally reject that kind of victimization and try to take a different approach to it.
And speaking of leadership, you all also, you guys wear a lot of hats. You do the fitness component, you do the community service component, but you also do leadership development within Team RWB. That's a big component. So, I mean, what's the Team RWB approach to leadership development? Is it taking military leadership principles and showing veterans and civilians how to apply them to civilian life, or is it something else?
No, it actually couldn't be any farther from taking military leadership principles. The way it started was our kind of the bread and butter of our organization are our chapters. That's where the meat of what we do happen. So, you know, that's where we connect veterans to their community. That's where the physical fitness happens. But, you know, we're a volunteer-led organization, and we recognized early on that if we were going to grow and become what we know the organization can become, we've got to have a pipeline of really good volunteer leaders to run these chapters. And so from there, we started a leadership development program a few years ago, and it's one of our two core programs now. And we're trying to, you know, full disclosure, we want to grow leaders to help grow our chapters, but we also want to make our communities better and to make our members better. So we've made some tremendous investments in our leadership development program for those reasons. And I guess to maybe answer your question more specifically about the content, no, it's all self-developed, and it's all, we try to take a needs-based kind of reverse engineer approach to this. And it's very unmilitary in its approach. Our leadership development is all about building genuine, and we do that through, we try to develop leaders that are empathetic and authentic and loyal, and that can building block is these genuine relationships in our organization. And so most of it is self-developed content, but we do work with a couple other kind of well-known parties and have plucked out things from Simon Sinek and Brené Brown, to name kind of two of the biggest ones that most people may have heard of. But it's all kind of self-developed internally.
And how can people get involved or take part in the leadership development? Is it just becoming a part of the Team RWB organization and then signing up for a course? Is it online? Is it you get together?
And you join the organization and just show up and come out to an event. And then really it just is you raising your hand and saying, I want to be a leader in the organization. And then that kind of starts you getting in the pipeline of being a leader. And it's not episodic. This is kind of ever evolving, and it's a big focus of ours for 2017, but we have kind of a leader experience it's a combination of kind of our own self-developed e-learning platform with different modules and experiential leadership, kind of doing things in person at Eagle Leader Academies and athletic camps. And it'll kind of get you into the pipeline, which is a multi-year experience.
Well, JJ, can you give us any specific examples of a veteran or veteran's life who was transformed by Team RWB?
You know, that's I think just out of maybe safety, I won't answer that specifically, because I think that's kind of like picking your kids. But what I would say is that on our website, we have kind of a weekly blog, and our members kind of like write in and write their own blogs about how our organization has changed their life. And there's a new one every Saturday. We call it a Saturday membership spotlight. And I would just say for anyone to kind of just go through and scroll through those if they like. And there are more than you want to read.
And how many members are a part of Team RWB now? I mean, it started in 2010. You've mentioned there's like hundreds of thousands of events you're doing. So how many people are in this thing?
Yeah, so currently we have about 110,000 members, and about 60 to 65% of those are veterans and the rest are not.
And if you're a civilian or a veteran, you want to get involved with Team RWB, how do they find out if there's a chapter near them?
Yeah, so you could just go to our website. It's teamrwb.org, and there's a chapter locator on there, and you can go see it's got all the fancy dancy stuff where it'll geolocate you and show you the chapters that are around you. And most everywhere that you could live in America, we have a chapter within reasonable distance to you. We're in every kind of major metropolitan area, and you can do that. And then you can go on and join the team, and someone from your local chapter will reach out to you within 48 hours and welcome you.
And if there isn't one, I mean, can a civilian start a chapter if they wanted to? What's the process there?
Yeah, absolutely. Anyone can start a chapter. You know, if someone wants to be a leader, then we're going to let them be a leader. And, you know, I think for events, you would probably not recognize who was in the military and who wasn't, because we try to make it a very kind of welcoming and inclusive experience for everybody. But yeah, absolutely. There's a start a chapter link on our website. And you can go put in an application to start a chapter.
And JJ, what's the future of Team RWB? Is it just continuing more of the same and just expanding it out? Or are you guys looking to get into other venues to help veterans connect with their community?
No, I think that we feel really good about our mission. And, you know, we've done a bunch of research that really, like, we feel really good about the efficacy of it. So there's not going to be any fundamental shifts in what we do. I think what you're going to see is two things. We want to do more of it, so in more places, and we want to do it better in the places we currently are. And then you're going to see just an increased focus in leadership development, because, you know, we know that we have to grow internally the leaders that we're going to need to grow the organization over the next 10 or 20 years.
Very good. Well, hey, JJ Pinter, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Brad. I really appreciate it.
My guest today was JJ Pinter. He's the deputy director of Team RWB. You can find more information about that and get involved at teamrwb.org. Also, check out our show notes at aom.is/teamrwb, where you can find links to resources where you can delve deeper into this topic. Well, that wraps up another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. For more manly tips and advice, make sure to check out the Art of Manliness website at artofmanliness.com. As always, appreciate your team's support, and one way you can do that is give us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. It takes less than a minute. Really helps out a lot. Until next time, this is Brett McKay telling you to stay manly.